Welcome to the Hawley Baptist Church podcast, bringing you into a community in which everyone is welcome, lives are changing, and Jesus is King. Thanks for listening with us today. We would invite you to subscribe so you can keep up to date with us. But for now, we pray you enjoy listening to what God has in store for you in this episode, and that it helps change your life for the better. In Jesus' name, enjoy.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us. I'm Angie.
Yeah, and I'm Bill. I'm assuming it's morning when they're watching this.
Well, they could be watching or listening anytime. They could be listening on the podcast.
Could be in the wee small hours.
Yeah. They could be using us to send them to sleep.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah. We're very good for that, folks. Yeah. If you've got insomnia,
It's good to have you with us, Hawley Baptist Church. Just to mention that from a couple of weeks' time, we're going to start Zooming our service live. So not quite ready to go yet, but that will be happening soon. So just email the office for details, join.in at hawleybaptist.org.uk, and we'll give you the details. Not quite ready to go yet, but coming soon.
Exciting.
So this morning, new sermon series.
Yes, investigating Jesus.
Yeah. Any thoughts? Looking forward to it.
Sounds like he's committed a crime.
It does.
I don't think he has. But yeah, because when I was a younger Christian, I used to love reading about, well, how do I know this is true? How do I know Jesus was a real person and that the stuff I'm reading about him actually happened? And I did a bit of reading around that, you know, when I was younger and had a bit more time.
Bit more hair.
Did you hear that, folks?
That's what I thought you were going to say.
Please write in to P.O. Box. No, don't do that. But I used to love reading. Josh McDowell we might talk about that a little bit later on.
Oh, good. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I loved a bit of Josh McDowell.
I'm not sure I've ever read Josh McDowell, although I obviously have heard of Josh McDowell. I can't even say his name, Josh McDowell.
We've all heard of Josh McDowell. Yeah.
So I think the new series is looking at the Gospel of Luke, which was written by Luke.
Yes.
Who was there? And that's what I'm excited for. Luke was there and saw some of these things. So
yeah.
That's a real.
And working in the NHS, I'm quite happy to say he was a doctor. Which is nice. So I'm on familiar ground.
That's perfect. Me too.
Yeah.
So shall we have a look at the intro video, see what's coming up?
Let's go for it.
Let's do that.
How did a movement sparked by a first century day labourer, rejected, crucified, go on to shape the world? Made it so compelling, so unstoppable, and why is it now so easy to dismiss? Maybe those first followers saw something we've missed. Maybe it's time to take a closer look. Maybe it's time to investigate Jesus.
And many of you know that I grew up in India. My dad was a missionary doctor in India. And the school I went to in India was an American curriculum school. So the big sport in that particular school was basketball. And if I may say so, I was pretty good at it. It was always my ambition that I would make the school team. It was a big thing. They had their own stuff and we played all sorts of games. And it was my ambition to make it. But when I was about 15 or 16, I was in my year group team. I was 15 or 16. I think it was the equivalent of year 11. We challenged the year above us, who were the equivalent of lower sixth, to a game of basketball. We thought we had a pretty good team, and they certainly had a good team. They provided most of the team for the school team, not all of them. We had a couple in there as well. I didn't make it till the following year. But we challenged them to a game. And we won. And I was so proud and delighted of this achievement, this major, major achievement, to put it any other way, that we had won this game of basketball. And I sat down and I wrote a letter to a friend of mine who had been at the school a few years ago. He'd gone back to the States, his parents had gone back home, but he knew the setup there. And I wrote to him about this game of basketball. I gave him the names of every member of our team, what position we played in the team, you know, guard, forward, center, whatever it was, and the height of each individual in that team. And I went on to describe the game. And the game, I don't really remember. I sent the letter off, I never had a response. I haven't got a clue what happened to it. I don't know if we ever got it. But we're looking now at a letter. And we are going to start the series investigating Jesus. Who was he? What did he teach? What, if anything, do I need to do in response to it all? And we're going to be using this letter of Luke. It's the third book in our New Testament and written by Luke, obviously, who it was believed was a doctor. I'm not going to go into any of the proof or evidence of the authenticity of it. You can deal with that another time. Today is for other matters. But I do want to put it into context and look at the timeline of the Bible as we have it today. Because our Bible as we have it today was put together about 300 years, that sort of timeline, after the events of Jesus. But the Gospels and Luke's letter as part of it and the letters of Paul and all the rest of the New Testament were written during the first century, somewhere in the time 50 to 100 AD, those sort of time periods. So shortly after, 20 to 30 years, that sort of timeline after the death and the resurrection of Jesus. And when the church first started out after Jesus had risen from the dead, there were plenty of people who were eyewitnesses to the event. We know that there were more than 500 people who witnessed a lot of the events that went on. And there were many of these people. And so the story of Jesus was not really written down and noted. It relied a lot on verbal communication. But as time went on, people realized they needed to write down and put together what had been happening so that it could keep a coherent message of what was going on. So we have the New Testament as it was. And most of these documents can be traced back, as I said, to that time, 50 to 100 AD. And churches all around the area, you can read about how they came to being in the fifth book called the Acts of the Apostles, would have had various documents, letters, gospels, just little portions, bits and pieces that would help them to understand and cement their faith in this new doctrine that had never been in the world before. But it wasn't until the time of the Emperor Constantine that the church had a lull in the persecution of the people who followed this faith. And so for 300 years, as the church grew, they were all suffering persecution. But now, under Constantine, the leaders and the scholars and the learned people could come out. And with the help and the blessing of the emperor, they put together the Bible as we know it today. So part of the reason and driving force of putting the Bible together was because of the events that had been taking place in those 300 years from the resurrection of Jesus until they put the Bible together. But the most important reason for putting the Bible together was that apart from Jesus, we have no Bible. If there is no death and there is no resurrection, there is no reason for the Bible. And so if there had been no reason and no death and resurrection, there would have been no church. There would have been no people to form that early church to pass on this wonderful message. There would have been, if there was no church, there would have been no learned people and nobody to document the events and nobody puts it together. So Jesus, ultimately, Jesus is the story. So I'm going to be looking, as we introduce this thing, investigating Jesus, at the first four verses of Luke's gospel so that we can understand what drove Luke to document the events in the way that he did. And why it is so important for us to read and to understand what is going on. So let's start firstly with the first two verses of Luke's gospel. Many people have attempted to write about the things that have taken place among us. Reports of these things were handed down to us. There were people who saw these things for themselves from the beginning and then passed the word on. Now let's go back, just pause there for a minute and go back to verse 1, in the very first verse, the very first word, many. I've glossed over this hundreds of times when I've read Luke's gospel, and only when I sat down to prepare for today was I opened up to this, many. How many is that? How many people? We don't know, 10, 40, 60, whatever. But Luke is clearly aware that he is not unique, that a lot of people have sat down and tried to write up about the events of the death and resurrection and the life of Jesus. He was not unique in this. He wasn't trying to claim he was unique. He understood that many people had done this. Now, to put that also into context, how many of you will have a book written about your life? And I know that in today's market, there are plenty of people who get books written about them. We get footballers who have books written about their life autobiography before they hit the age of 30 and things like that. And I know that goes on. But in the first century, as far as I could find out, there is only one person who has had a story written about their life. And that was Herod the Great, and written by Josephus. And all the other people that we read about, they've been cobbling documents together to get you an understanding of what happened. But the only other person was Jesus. And he didn't have one person writing about him. He had many people writing about him. Many of them. There's something important. So a lot of people were driven to doing this. He understood. And Luke was one of them. He understood that he had to document these extraordinary events that had taken place, that these needed to be written down and documented. And it is vital, because although he may not have understood that, the implications of what he wrote, the implications were there for generations to come. And we now, just over 2,000 years later, are benefiting from his effort. So let's go to verse 2. We've written many things that have taken place. Reports of these things were handed down to us. There were people who saw these things for themselves. Or as it says in the NIV, they're handed up for people who were first-hand eyewitnesses. Now, if you read the book of Acts, which is the fifth book in our Bible, in the New Testament, Luke himself traveled extensively with a guy called Paul. Paul, who wrote a good lot of the New Testament, and started out by wandering around, well, not just wandering, he was actually traveling around Asia Minor and various places, planting churches, bringing people to faith, planting churches, and moving on. And he did extensive travel. And Luke traveled with him a good lot. He also knew the disciples of Jesus, Peter and John, who were the close disciples to Jesus. He also knew James, the brother of Jesus. And he knew these people who had lived with and seen what Jesus had done. So we have a link that when Luke is writing, he is drawing on eyewitness accounts along with other documents to write down everything that had happened. And he sets out to do it in an orderly fashion. And he's keen that he starts this at the very beginning. There were people who saw these things from the beginning and then passed the word on. And so Luke is the only one in the Gospels who starts with the birth of John the Baptist. And he goes right back there to this important man who proclaimed the way of Jesus as he went on. Now let's move on to verse 3. I myself have carefully looked into everything from the beginning. So it seemed good also to me to write down an orderly report of exactly what happened. I am doing this for you, most excellent Theophilus. I want you to know that the things you have been taught are true. What is Luke setting out to do? He is writing a letter to a person. He's not writing a book to be included in the Bible. That's going to happen 300 years' time from now. He is writing a personal letter to a person. He has no idea whether the letter will be preserved, but he has a motive for writing. And the motive is there. He's carefully looked into everything, and he wants to put it down in an orderly orderly fashion. And he wants to encourage Theophilus. And his motives were far better and far greater than someone like me who just wrote about some little basketball game that's been forgotten by everybody apart from me. First of all, who was Theophilus? Don't know much more about him, but he's probably a man of quite high standing because of the way he's addressed. Notice that he's addressed as Most Excellent Theophilus. And he is probably a believer who has had the opportunity to not only hear about Jesus, but to read about Jesus. And Luke is going to start going further. But he's going, when he writes this in, he is underlining and he is ramming home what Theophilus has already been taught. And part of that is so that Theophilus can be confident that these new teachings that he has heard and read about are true. He's underlining it all and just keeping them going. Now, the early church, with all the various documents they had, were able in various ways to recognize those documents that were valuable and those that they were not quite as valuable. And quite early on, this letter of Luke was written down that it was valuable. And so we need to understand, though, and it was for this reason, it was valuable because of when it was written, who it was written by. They would know Luke, a lot of them, and how he got his material to write. It was a valuable document. Now, Luke's gospel, we have to understand this as well, is not valuable because it is in the Bible. It is in the Bible because it is valuable. Let me put it this way. I think we all have things at home that we think are valuable. It might be jewelry, it might be money, it might be documents, it might be paintings, antiques, whatever, you name it. We've all got things that we think are valuable. And whether we put them in a special safe place or whether we put them somewhere odd so that if we're away on holiday, whatever, we look after them, we take care of them. The fact that we take care of them does not make them valuable. They are already valuable. Luke's gospel is valuable, and that is why it is included in the gospel, in the Bible, because it already had this valuable material in it that we need to look at. So you see, Luke had used eyewitness accounts and other documents, and he set out the life of Jesus in a proper, orderly fashion. He did this to enable him to encourage another person, Theophilus, to have more confidence in his newfound faith. His account needs to be taken seriously, and it has implications for you, and it has implications for me on how we react to what has been written. I've already mentioned that Jesus himself is the story, and Luke makes that abundantly clear, as we'll see over the weeks to come as we listen about other bits and pieces. So we have a choice. We accept what is being claimed in this letter, or we reject it. But please do not just shrug your shoulders and get on with your life, because really, this letter does demand a response, and don't just ignore it and park it to one side. I was planning to actually encourage everybody to read the book of Luke between now and Easter, because in our sermon series, we can't possibly cover every single word in it. There'll be certain sections in it as we pick out different bits and pieces. And I'm really pleased to say that there is going to be a Bible reading plan put together so that everybody can join in to read through Luke's gospel between now and the end of the series. And I believe that if you scan the QR code, that you will be able to see and get the details of how to read on the daily reading plan. I would encourage all of you to do it. I myself will be doing it. I am actually just, it's a different matter. I am actually just coming to the end of Luke, having read it, but I'm quite happy to go back and start again. So here are now some questions for your thought. When did you last read the Gospel of Luke?
Are you willing to believe what is written in this letter? How will you respond to what you read?
Wow, thank you, Andy.
Yeah, very good. So, yeah, it's about... It's interesting, isn't it? It's about that foundation of our faith. And a lot of people say the foundation of faith is a book. Actually, it's a person.
Yeah, yes. I started off near the beginning by saying Jesus is the story. And I quite like that.
Yeah.
It's quite...
Yeah. This idea that Jesus is the heart of... And Paul said that, didn't he? He said, and it's not just Jesus, it's what happened to Jesus. Because if Paul said, if Jesus wasn't raised from the dead, all the rest...
Then what's the point?
Yeah, all the rest is rubbish.
Yeah.
Because it means nothing. It's just another guy who died on a Roman cross because they didn't like him. Mm. And, you know, it's why would that make an impact on our lives today?
Yeah.
And the fact that we're sitting here today is evidence that something happened.
Yeah, absolutely.
Why would we be sat here 2,000 years later?
If he was just another man.
Other than 2 billion people on the planet.
Yeah.
Something happened.
Something.
Which is amazing, really, isn't it?
Yeah. And I guess the fact that Luke wrote it down. Is testament to how amazing and dramatic it was.
So
Andy was talking about the credibility of Luke, wasn't he? And the fact that Luke's actually in our gospel because it was written at the time, it was considered to be a treasure.
Yeah, it was very important. And I think that's one thing we get wrong, isn't it? We think the Bible was written at the time it was put together. The Bible wasn't written at the time it was put together. The Bible was already in existence. It was just in bits, really.
Yeah.
And it had been circulated. It was already accepted by the people because it was already being used.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't collected together until sort of that council when Constantine, who was the first emperor who ever became Christian.
And when was that ish?
Oh, now you're asking.
Sorry, Phil, I know.
I think it was 300 and something. I think it was 320s, 320 AD. So, yeah.
But it was written. Well, Luke was a contemporary of Jesus, so if you wrote it, it was written very soon after.
Yeah, we don't know whether he ever met Jesus or whether he was a disciple who came to faith after that.
Okay.
But most scholars believe that the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, definitely Matthew, Mark, and Luke, John might have been written a bit later, but they were all written, and here's the key thing, they were all written within living memory. So there were people alive at the time that they were written. That could say, and this is a good historical criteria, isn't it? If you write it when people are alive who saw it, they could come back at you and say, that didn't happen.
Yes.
Or, no, you got that wrong. Or, so it improves the accuracy of things.
Yeah.
So it was written within eyewitness accounts.
Because
we think Luke probably, one of the people Luke probably knew quite well was Mary. Because if you read Luke's account of Mary, there's lots of really personal stuff in there. She treasured all these things in her heart.
Mm-hmm.
She was really miffed when Joseph hadn't booked the travel lodge, which I'd be, well, let's be honest.
Yeah, in all fairness,
but
a baby would all be miffed.
Matthew doesn't mention that because he's not interviewing Mary.
But
Mary mentions it to Luke.
Yeah.
Because she's going, hang on a minute. Yeah. So it's interesting. We know he interviewed eyewitnesses of what happened.
Yeah.
So they were all written within 20 or 30 years of Jesus' death. So if they were written about 60 AD, that's within 30 years of Jesus' death. So, yeah, and I love that idea because what we do, there's an argument about historical accuracy. And we, for example, you believe in the Battle of Hastings, don't you?
I do.
Do you?
I think that's probably 1066. Was that right?
It was.
Go me. Oh, I passed the history test. Yes, I do believe in the Battle of Hastings.
Mark Santan, you did, obviously got a good grade in your history.
Yeah, no, I didn't do history. But anyway.
Did you not?
Anyway, continue.
So, you probably shouldn't believe the Battle of Hastings.
Why should I not? Because I wasn't there?
Yeah, well, partly, yeah, that's part of it. But partly because the number of manuscripts about the Battle of Hastings and describing what happened were written hundreds and hundreds of years after the event. So there's no eyewitnesses. And not only this, the earliest versions we have of the Battle of Hastings are hundreds of years after it happened. And there's only about, I think there's less than 10 of them.
Okay.
Do you know how many documents, fragments of Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, there were within a 30-year period of Jesus' death?
I don't, Phil. Tell me.
24,000.
Wow.
We have 24,000 manuscripts or partial manuscripts that were written within eyewitness time frame of the events of Jesus Christ.
Amazing.
So there is more evidence for Jesus than there is for the Battle of Hastings. Wow. And yet nobody questions the Battle of Hastings.
What
does that say?
I don't know what that says, but it's fascinating. Well, every day is a school day.
It says we're all biased, doesn't it? It says the world says, oh, no, I believe that.
Yes, we'll believe that because that's...
Because it doesn't affect me.
Yeah, yes.
I don't have to do anything about it.
So I guess what's the take-home from this? So the take-home from this, isn't it, it's around the fact that what we read in the Gospel of Luke is true.
Yeah.
So what we read about Jesus being the story, is true. What Jesus said is true. And it will impact and change our lives.
Yeah. There's evidence that you can rely on this material, that actually it's not just some bloke in a cave somewhere, you know, with a hairy jacket on, just making it all up, some weirdo. That's the problem. And that's why we struggle with the Bible, I think, because if it is true, what am I going to do about it? Because if it is true, that changes everything.
It
changes my life.
Yeah, it does. And that's the exciting thing about it. It changes your life. And that's the exciting thing about Jesus. He didn't just come to be a good man, but he came so that we could have change.
Yeah.
And thinking back to the last series, so we can have that amazing, abundant, eternal life.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. Because the Bible, I think that's one of the things that somebody once said to me is the Bible isn't for information. It's for transformation. Because if it's true, it changes absolutely everything. You have to reevaluate what you're doing with your life and why you're doing it based on this person, Jesus, because it has to impact your life today because it changes your destiny, doesn't it? It changes your future and your present. It's an amazing thought. And it did that. And the Bible, that's one of the proofs of the Bible, I think. There's a lovely story about this bloke who, his name is Julius, can't remember his surname. I think he was a Scottish Presbyterian and one day he became a Christian, believed that what was said about Jesus was true, and he became a Christian. And he thought, well, I've got to tell other people about this. So he went off to Colombia, and all of his mates said, don't do that. That's a really ridiculous thing to do. You know, go and get a job, get a house, you know, do all the usual stuff. He said, no, I've got to go and tell people about this. So he went to Colombia, and he worked there and was telling people about it. Mm-hmm. For years, and actually all of his mates were saying, you're wasting your time, because nothing was happening. He wasn't getting through to anybody. Mm-hmm. And then one day he was taking a flight from one part of Colombia to another, because that's the easiest way of getting around in those days. And his plane crashed. He died. And years later, the mission group that sent him out went over there, expecting, again, that his life had no impact. And they got there, and where the plane had crashed, there were churches everywhere, tons of churches. And they said, well, what happened? Who came and told you about Jesus and that you need to do something about this if it's true, which we're talking about? And they said, nobody. And they said, well, hang on, how do you know anything about it then? And they pulled out this Bible, and in the front was the name of this guy, Julius, whatever his name was.
Yeah.
A well-thumbed Bible, and they had taken the Bible, they had read it, and it had transformed all the villagers in that area, and they'd all become Christians without anybody preaching to them. So, I mean, what other book? I mean, the last time I read a Jack Reacher novel, it didn't really change my life.
No, no.
But the number of stories of people reading the Bible and it changing their lives.
Yes.
What is it about this book that does that? I think that's staggering.
I think that's absolutely amazing. We talked about the Bible being a sword of the spirit or a living word, or and inspired by God, which to me means that God is moving through it all the time. And there is something. God does use his word to...
It happens all the time.
Yeah.
People in prison, you're always reading about people in prison. Pick up a Bible.
That's an amazing story. Yeah.
But
it's because of the Jesus that's in the story, isn't it?
Because
of the reality and the of Jesus. Wow.
The power of that story, and that it gives us all a second chance, and it gives us all forgiveness, and it gives us all an opportunity to be something more and live for something more than our own lives is powerful.
Really powerful.
And it's one of the most powerful books. Well, it is the most powerful book in the world.
It's life-changing.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, so I think this week I'm going to read the book of Luke.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, one of the questions was, when did you last read the book of Luke? Well, I don't know. I think a few years back I tried to read the Bible in a year, and I think I started Genesis and Matthew. And I probably did read Luke then, but that was... But start to, there's something about reading a book from start to finish, isn't there? And the, the gospel narratives are easy to read because they're story. So I think maybe maybe this week, maybe that's a challenge for others. We could
It wouldn't take long, actually.
No,
would
it's
it?
Not very long, is it?
No, it's worth doing. There you go. Quick challenge, folks.
Quick challenge. Read
Pick up one of the gospels and read it through. Yeah.
Mark's the shortest one, isn't it?
Mark's really quite short. Yeah, you could probably do it in a day, I reckon.
I'm going to go for Luke this week.
Go for it.
Cool. Any more take homes?
Sounds good. No, I just, I think it's just, I just wish we treated the Bible like we treat every other historical event, because there's more evidence. The Bible is more credible in terms of historical accuracy than a lot of other stuff.
Yeah.
Could talk about the Pool of Bethesda and stuff like that. Do you know about that one?
No, go on then. All right.
Because one of the proofs that the Bible is accurate is that it actually documents stuff that nobody else has found, and then they find it. And the Pool of Bethesda, which is a pool in Jerusalem that people used to use when people were sick, they used to jump in it, thinking that an angel had stirred the waters and that you'd get miraculous healed. And the Pool of Bethesda is mentioned in the Bible in one of the in the Gospels. And all the historians up until about 50, 60 years ago said it doesn't exist. It's not there. It's it's rubbish. You know, it's talking about something that it's not accurate, they said. And then they found it. They found the Pool of Bethesda.
Wow.
So, you know, it's been, and there's other stuff about reading texts about Pontius Pilate. There were questions about him being the governor of Judea and all this sort of stuff. Turns out they find historical evidence proving that he was. So the Bible said it first, then his archaeology caught up.
Wow, amazing.
And there's tons of that. There's tons of that. Yeah. So there you go, folks.
You go.
It's not just a theological book or a book of nice ideas. It's accurate. Yeah.
Yeah. Go read it. Be changed.
Yeah.
Right. Then we're going to sign off.
Yeah, we better do, haven't we?
So if you've enjoyed today, do... like us, follow us on YouTube, do share it with your friends, and you can catch all our sermons or our podcasts on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, lovely.
And look forward to seeing you next time.
Yeah, will do. Keep tuning into the series.
In fact, in just a little, in 2 weeks' time, Phil's actually speaking, aren't you?
I am.
Yeah, so you've enjoyed Phil's little nuggets this morning. 2 weeks' time, there'll be more
nuggets.
Yeah.
Sounds like a breakfast cereal. There you go.
Anyway, excellent. Thanks for being with us. And take care.
Yeah, have a good one.
That was today's episode of the Hawley Baptist Church podcast. We hope it's prompted you to want to follow Jesus even just a little bit more closely. If you have any questions about what you've heard in today's episode, or you want to know more about what it means to follow Jesus, you can email us at gotquestions@hawleybaptist.org.uk. We would love to hear from you. It would really make our day. If you want to hear more from us, just a reminder that you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can access that and our YouTube channel by heading to hawleybaptist.org.uk/media. Thank you again for listening to the Hawley Baptist Church podcast. We pray God will bless you, and we will see you next time.